Hey friends, it's Rich here from the Unseminary Podcast. Welcome to our monthly episode all about multi-site. I love this. I want to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by another organization that is all about multi-site, and that is Portable Church Industries. Listen, chances are if you're going to go multi-site, your first campus, your next campus is going to be portable. That's in like a school, movie theater, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I want you to reach out to Portable Church Industries. They've got this killer multi-site timeline checklist on their website, www.portablechurch.com/unseminary, that really will walk you through the process. It's a great overview, but you really should reach out to them and try to get on the phone and get to know them a little bit better. They provide not only coaching, but they do system design, build, everything from AVL down to the smallest items. They do an incredible job. I love them. I really can't endorse them enough. They're incredible. So their address again to go to is www.portablechurch.com/unseminary. Well, I'm super excited about today's episode, all about multiple services when you kick off your campus. So let's go.
You're listening to Unseminary's All About Multi-Site podcast. Are you launching another location and not sure where to start? Do you already have a few campuses, but they're not thriving as much as you'd like? We've gathered industry-leading church leaders to help answer all of your multi-site church questions. Unseminary, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Hey everybody, welcome to All About Multisite. This is our once a month show, the last Wednesday of the month, and I just love this opportunity to sit down and talk with some friends all about multisite. Today we've got a great question from a listener excited to dive in. I think it's going to be helpful for a lot of church leaders that are thinking about launching a campus in the next year or so. I think you'll find today's conversation really helpful for that. But let me take a moment and just introduce you to our panel. First up, we've got Natalie Frisk. She's our family ministry expert. She is a key leader at a church called The Meeting House. This church has 21 locations. Oh my goodness, that makes me tired just thinking about it. Plus a killer kids curriculum that I actually just heard out in the wild. I talked to a church 2 weeks ago, and I said, "What are you doing on kids front?" And you're going to ask me which church, and that's going to be a problem. I'm not going to remember. Okay. And they said, "Oh, we do this thing from this church called The Meeting House." And yeah. I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, "Tell me about that." And they were like raving about it, which was great. So fantastic tool. So Natalie, welcome to the show. We're asking a question to kick off to everybody. And that question is, what's something surprising or like, wow, that kind of caught your attention that you've learned about leadership in the last year? You've been in sabbatical mode, so hopefully there's just tons, you know.
Yes. I have all the learnings. No, thanks for having me, Rich. I think the thing that has been surprising and so incredibly helpful for me that I've learned about leadership in the last year is is something that a mentor of mine said to me years ago, but mm-hmm. it didn't really sink in until this year. And once you hear it, you're going to think, what a horrible mentor you have. But it's actually the best thing I could have possibly heard. And it's really kind of sunk down into my soul. And it's this: you're not as important as you think you are. And it's true. You know, it's God's kingdom and he's gonna, you know, continue to push through the things that need to happen. And I get to be a vessel. I get to be part mm-hmm. of this cool thing. He chooses to partner with us, and that's like such a cool thing. But he does that, I think, more for our benefit of experience. And so I'm not as important as I think I am, which is such a relief, actually, in so many ways. Nice. And because of that, honestly, I was able to take a sabbatical and say, hey, I can pause and rest and know that that killer kids curriculum, Rich, that you're just talking about, can go on without me. And that's great. And that's, yes. I'm okay with that. And that's actually a really healthy, good thing. So yeah, learning to Sabbath and take a break and know that God's going to continue to work was really healthy for me.
Oh, that's good. Great stuff. Love that. Next, we've got Greg Curtis, our guest connections and assimilation expert. He leads one of the fastest growing churches in the country. He's a part of the leadership there. Really love Eastside and everything they're up to. Greg and I got a chance to have lunch together a couple weeks ago and loved kind of seeing him on his stomping grounds, which was nice. So Greg, welcome to the show. What's something surprising you've learned in the last year or so?
Two things. One is, that loving relationship makes leadership almost effortless. I did not expect that. I've heard, you know, if you really care about the people you lead, then, you know, it's servant leadership. And if they know that you're real and that you really care and people you know, that old saying about, what is it about the care, you know, that people don't care what you know until they know that you care and all that kind of stuff. So I had an interesting experience, and I've had it multiple times lately involving leadership, where I had a big ask, and it was asking of our youth pastor at the time. And I went and asked him for something big and to change that, whatever. And he said, absolutely. I go, well, that was easy. He goes, Greg, who could ever tell you no? And I was like, what? Because to me, that meant, am I that heavy? You know, like, am I this big, you know, like authoritative thing that people don't feel? But I knew what he was saying. He was saying it really quick. Like, he was almost giving me a hug. Like, and I thought, what does that mean? And then I've seen moments like that over the last year, multiple times, meaning that, I'm in a stage of life where I'm getting what I ask for as a leader, and I'm starting to discover the reason is because I just love people.
Oh, nice.
And when you have a loving relationship, it just is so easy. There's nobody that's second guessing your motives or feeling manipulated or feeling like, you know, you don't get them or care about their sitch. So anyway, that's been kind of a fun, joyful discovery. And the other one, the other one that, that people actually want to grow as a leader. They want to become a leader and they want to grow as leaders. I think in our churches, we're used to just thinking if we're recruiting a leader, we have this big old ask, and they know that we're just kind of wanting to offload responsibilities off to them and to volunteers and that, please, will you do this? I am finding especially since we've created our people development culture and our leadership pipeline, that people are wanting more time being developed as leaders. And when we do it, and when it's actually leadership development, it's not just about doing things at your church, but it's leadership things that they can use at home, at work, whatever. They are so hungry. They will want more. They want to meet with you all the time. They want to grow. And I just didn't realize how much people actually want to grow as leaders. They do. And those two things have been very joyful, unexpected discoveries about leadership over the past year.
Nice. Very cool. And finally, we have Ben Stapley. He is our communications and service programming expert. Ben is one of the most helpful people I know online. He's an incredible leader, always giving stuff away. He is the weekend experience director at Christ Fellowship Miami. Fantastic church. And just glad to have you on the show today, Ben. Ben, what is something that you're learning that's maybe a bit surprising about leadership in this last year?
Yeah, I got two as well. The first is I'm not as good as a leader as I thought or fancied myself to be, is the first one. Right. And, you know, like, hey, like, I mean, leaders are learners. I've been reading a book a month, you know, for the past 10 years. I've attended Willow's leadership, the Global Leadership Summit for the past 10 years. Like, I'm a leader. I've been gifted in this, and I've learned on this, and I've studied on this. And coming from the Northeast and being placed here in the Miami culture, there's a lot of things in terms of my leadership that were deficiencies that I just wasn't aware of, that the culture kind of allowed me to cover up and hide some of my negative tendencies. And so that's the first thing that I realized in the past year, that I'm not as good as, or I've, maybe the positive way to say it is, I have a lot of areas to grow in terms of my leadership strengths. And so that's the first thing. And then to kind of piggyback of what Greg was saying, a big learning for me in maybe the past 3 months, I just started going through, I finished Clay Scroggins' Leading from the Second Chair. And he's a great book, great resource. If you haven't read it, consume it right away. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that kind of stuck, kind of, you know, absorbed into my soul was one of his sound bites was, you can manage people that you don't love, but you can't lead people that you don't love. And I was like, yeah, like I can do that. I can manage pretty efficiently and effectively towards people that that I don't love. But if I really want to lead them, if I want to draw out the best of them and help them reach who they've been designed to be by God, I really need to love them. And that needs to be the core foundation of where I'm starting at and where I'm moving towards, instead of just efficiency or effectiveness or some of the more core managerial traits that you lead from a manager's perspective. So I think that was the hard thing for me. And the hardest thing was when I posted it socially. So this is, if you want to grow as a leader, you call out and own your shortcomings publicly, because guess what? People will graciously call you to account, which is hard, right? Because you don't want to be called. But hey, everyone knows your shortcomings already. You just own it publicly, and then you allow them to to say, hey, you're kind of doing it again right now. I don't feel like you're operating out of love right now. I feel like a tool in your hands and you're just trying to utilize me for the maximum effectiveness. I don't feel like you're actually loving me. So when I posted that socially, that was the big learning curve for me right there, to have a lot of those critical conversations that week with people who said, hey, I saw you post something. Can we talk about that?
Let's talk about that. Yeah, that's great. Very cool. Well, I'd say for me, you know, I think for me in this last, you know, 6 months to a year, I've been wrestling more and more with, I think as a leader, particularly if you're in an organization where, you know, you maybe have some staff who report to you and you're, you know, they're folks that work full time for you. I really, increasingly, I'm like, I think probably 50, 60% of my job is just acquiring great staff. Like if I could get great people to work for me, I probably need to spend more time, effort, and energy on the front end before people even, you know, join the team. What can we do to ensure that that onboarding experience is the best it can be? Ensure the first 90 days is the best it can be? Ensure that we're finding the right people, getting them on the right seat of the bus? And I think if we do that right, I really, you know, you see great trickle down from that, you know, and obviously the converse of that is when things aren't in the right spot, people aren't in the right seat on the bus, it really does head in the wrong direction. So, well, we really appreciate you listening in. The way we structure these episodes is we'd love to hear from you. We'd love for you to record a question. You can do that just on your phone and email it over to me, rich@unseminary.com, and we'd be happy to answer your question. Today, we've got a question from a dear friend, a friend of mine, Robert, from outside of Omaha, Nebraska. So let's listen into Rob's question as we head into the rest of the episode.
Hey, Rich, this is Robert Kahn, one of the pastors at Reality Church in Papillion, Nebraska, just outside of Omaha. My question is, we are launching a second campus in the fall, and we want to know, when it's a larger venue, do we start with multiple services? Do we start with two services, say, so our volunteers can attend one and serve one? Or do we start with one service and do that well, and then ultimately work up to adding a second service? In terms of your volunteers and the work required and all of that, what have you guys found to be the best practice?
Nice. Okay. A great question. I think a lot of us wrestle through as we're thinking about launching a new location, or even as you look at your current locations, you know, should we stick with one or do two? What would that look like? And so I'd love for our panel to kind of reflect on not only kind of what they've done, what your journey has been in that, but if there are things you'd love to pass along to folks that are listening in around launching. And this whole volunteer piece, I think it's so critical. One of my convictions, having sat through 13 launches, been a part of 13 launches, is the core success factor is the health and size of the volunteer core. And so I really do think that this piece is a critical part of that, thinking through, you know, hey, are we going to do one or two, that sort of thing. So Natalie, from a family ministry point of view, what do you think? How should we be thinking about this one service too? What have you guys done at the Meeting House?
Yeah, great question. So we have tried and failed some different things. So maybe you can learn from some of our attempts and refinements. We have always, with our campuses, launched single services. However, a few years ago, and I have no memory between, I could say it was like 5 years ago, I could say it was 10 years ago, I honestly am not sure. We tried to do two services at some of our locations and ran into a whole slew of issues with two services at locations that maybe didn't necessarily require that at that point. There's definitely the number of volunteers that you need to nail things well and the overall buy-in. But what happens with two services is that you end up, when you begin with two services, you're going to almost guarantee, when you're starting at a new location, kind of getting all of the kinks out, you definitely run into two sets of bad habits if you have two services. So all of the different things that you're training your volunteers to do, you're going to have some great wins, but you're also going to have different things start to develop that would be bad habits that volunteers also tend to develop, and us as leaders. And when you have one service, you just have one set of bad habits. you can more easily refine and work with that one set of bad habits. Refine the edges, get it all ironed out. I'm going to use as many metaphors apparently as possible. and then launch that second service, knowing all of the pieces that are required at that location. I think there is definitely some wisdom in starting strong, feeling like you know it is what you're doing, what the campus is set to handle, and all those kinds of things. But I would also throw in that there are a number of different factors to consider, and I'm sure all of these have gone into consideration for Reality Church. To consider what is the capacity of the location. I mean, especially when you're talking kids or families, I think one of the very worst things that you can do is turn away people with kids. So if you don't have the capacity for all of the, you know, kids classes and things like that, that is worth considering a second service. However, if you do have the capacity, I think there is a win in feeling that that great synergy that comes with high volume of people when they're together, and really working off of that energy and then launching a second service down the road. So it feels like the first win is launching the site, the campus. The second win then is launching another service. You want to keep those wins going. Also, just to say, as far as things to take into consideration from a family ministry point of view, would be things like the cost for prepping for two services. I know for us, we have in our production site, our main location, we have three services. One of the services is very, very early in the morning. God bless the people who attend. And it is our lowest attendant service. It's at like 8 o'clock. It's like an unholy hour, I'll be honest with you. And so people with kids are just, they're not coming to that service. And once we discovered that people with kids are not coming to that service, we actually stopped doing kids programming at that very early hour. And there was not a single family that was upset by that.
And oh, interesting. Okay.
All of our kids programming happened in the next two services. And so we've really, in doing so, there's costs for prep that get chopped down, because you always over prep. You always want to over prep craft supplies and all those kinds of things. And if you're over prepping for two services, well, then you're throwing in costs for two services as opposed to really nailing that one well. And then when you go over capacity to be able to launch another service. I could go on, but maybe I'll pass the baton and then maybe come back.
Well, I think there's going to be some healthy disagreement on today's podcast, which is exciting. Looking forward to that. Some pushback. Greg, what about you? From your perspective, what do you think is kind of the best thing to do, or what are you doing at Eastside these days?
Well, when it comes to launching a campus, we have always started with two services. And, you know, there are lots of reasons for that. I think it's it helps you build the campus and reach people when there is more than one option. I agree with, I think it was what Ben said earlier about the volunteers, or maybe it was, you know, have, or actually our call-in, which was, you know, having volunteers can serve in one and then worship in one and these kind of things. I think it's a very healthy thing to start with two and grow those two services well, rather than trying to start it later. So we've always started with two. Our campus with the smallest auditorium started with two, and they're now up to four services. And we have five services at our broadcast campus. But one of the issues to consider is critical mass, because if you commit to starting two, which is what I would recommend, is you need to work on critical mass. Like when Robert, you know, called in, I thought I heard him say, did he not say that they were thinking like 70 to 90 or something like that people to start?
Yeah, I think it'll end up in that range. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that I would just consider starting bigger than that, you know, before launch, to really have a good, a bigger core. So what we do is we do a kind of a map of what volunteers we need. We call our volunteers change makers. So if I use that interchangeably, listeners know what I mean. But so we'll make a change maker map, a list of volunteers of how many volunteers do we need in what areas? What's the minimum to start? Okay. So usually when we do a campus, I have seen that list is usually 110, somewhere between 110 and 150 people, just volunteer positions. to do church in the way that we see it being done in two services. And so what we do then in order to help build that critical mass is for a few months before the launch, if it's a campus, which most of ours are, that's within driving distance of our broadcast campus, is that we have these interest meetings after church, and you can come in there 15 minutes. There's usually a snack offered there, stay 15 minutes after church to find out how you can be a part of this launch. And you, you make a commitment for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or 12 months to be a part of as a volunteer. And many of them end up staying, you know, but a lot of them just fulfill their requirement. But either way, they come to these 15-minute meetings. They get some vision from the campus pastor, and then they hear based on their shape, here's, you know, many of the different plays and your maybe your best play. And then they meet, you know, maybe for 5 minutes with the leader of that ministry, which could be a staff person or a key volunteer we already recruited. But in so doing that on several different weekends, you're building that critical mass to launch two services. You know, you know you're going to have enough volunteer core. And in the meantime, you're doing some mailers, some outreach in that new community, you know, really taking advantage of building relationships there. And an example of how that's recently worked for us, we just launched a new campus the last weekend of March. So just a couple weeks ago. Okay. And that was a very interesting journey because that one was a good 50 plus miles away from our broadcast campus. And that one was a church that was, you know, deciding to close down and reopen as an Eastside. And it was just 30 people and in a community called Redlands near the mountains here in California. And that church, they had their last service in December. And then we needed to build out their auditorium, install technology, do some stuff. So we moved them into their fellowship hall, which would become their commons in our language at Eastside. And and they started just meeting in there, having church with our campus pastor while that was happening, but it's not open to anybody, right? Well, in January, I came and did next steps for the for all of their church. And by January, they grew, and the church isn't open to 80 people. And then 60 of them did next steps with me after church. And then when that was done, they just kept growing because then we had our At the Movie series, and they started inviting friends to church in a like a little hall, you know, it wasn't even open. And so by before the launch weekend, they had grown to 150 people. And then when we did the launch, we had 550 people show up for the launch. But of course, a lot of Anaheim people drew and support. So the weekend after that, it was just under 300. But now Easter's coming. So two services I think is a can do, but you have to have critical mass and you have to know how to build that critical mass, both through some spontaneous and organic outreach, some planned outreach with mailers and other things. And I think you need to leverage these two last things, time of year and auditorium size. So your time of year, the way I look at a year, there's three big bumps in attendance, usually Christmas, New Year's, Easter, and like fall kickoff. And it's really great. We've launched them with fall kickoff, and we've launched them similar to this one where, you know, you launch it in March, and then they're really humming and have some momentum so that when Easter comes, they're really going to have another big attendance. Right. And even though they don't stay at those levels for the launch and for Easter, they never go down to the other one, and the two services become full. And so time of year, I think, needs to be considered for when you launch. Because if you take my recommendation of starting two services, you want to leverage time of year to make sure that you're going to attract the biggest crowds possible. You also want to make sure your auditorium size, like in this case, that auditorium is a really good size auditorium. It seats 400, and we can, you know, and we do chairs and everything. So you just set up the right amount of chairs, you know, so it feels full, and then you can add chairs as needed. And just make sure that your auditorium size fills full no matter how many that you're expecting, and just kind of leverage that. And I think between those two things, I think you can start with two. But I would definitely recommend launching with a higher number of people to form that community than what I was hearing Robert say. That's my recommendation.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. Appreciate that. I'm excited to hear what Ben has to say from a service programming point of view. And then We'll see how this conversation continues to round out. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I appreciate you poking the bear here, Rich, and trying to get us to disagree with each other. that you've done that successfully between Greg and Natalie. So yeah, I lean more with Greg in terms of launching two to start with from a service and programming perspective, mainly because you get more bang for the buck. If you think about all the people that created content during the course of the week, your teachers or preachers spending 10 to 15 hours developing a message, your worship team crafting, practicing the individually and then as a team, the worship set. And then also like from production, if you're, you know, programming lights and haze, that takes all that time to do, content creation in the course of the week. And then come the weekend, it's just execution. And that's the fun part of it. So for me, I say like, yeah, like do an extra one.
Do 23.
Just keep doing them. Just do them again and again. Yes. But if your preacher spent all that time developing a message and, or your band did all that time working on the set, then, you know, logistically speaking, one extra hour kind of duplicates and doubles the impact that you could have from all that hard work during the course of the week. Just to do another service and hang around for an extra hour and a half, 2 hours, and do another service from that standpoint, there's huge ROI there. And I'm also going to steal the line from Allen Iverson, right? Like practice, like no one likes to practice. This is a chance for your performers to perform. Like that's what they're built to do. Communicator wants to perform. Mm-hmm. The worship leader wants to perform. They want to do, that's the fun stuff. And so if they've done all the hard work in the course of the week, reward them by giving them an opportunity to do it again so that they feel like there's a lot of impact from what they do. So that's the first one that I say. Why to do it. Now, the second one is probably like maybe a little OCD on my end, but from like the communications standpoint, like I just love it when you can say like, we got three locations, services at 9 and 11. Yes. Again, that's probably my OCD, but once you start having to like list all your locations and the various times, it gets like really confusing. So mm-hmm. if you already have a standard at one of your campuses and you're able to duplicate that, that just makes the communication a little simpler. Again, don't let the tail wag the dog, but it is something to consider. And then the big third reason, and I don't think we've touched on it yet, in terms of why to add another service is the invite culture and the evangelistic side of this. So mm-hmm. when you are launching a campus with your core volunteers and you launch one campus, that's great. They are now serving at that service. We touched on, if you have two, they serve one, they attend one. But that's not the end goal. They serve one, they attend/invite for one. So when you have those two services, you allow that, you bake in a growth model. You bake in a growth opportunity. If you just have one, you don't have any of that opportunity. So beyond thinking about how you are spiritually feeding your volunteers and giving them a chance to come to that second service, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than them. It's bigger than just feeding them. It's giving them that opportunity to invite others as well to that secondary service in which they're not serving. That's the big thing.
Can I interject 1 second on that, Ben?
Yeah.
Because I love what you're saying, and forgive me, but I'm going to bang this drum. It's very adult centric. What I think when you do this, it's great. I love the invitation. I like all of that. I'm like, yes, great. But you've got to account for the kids in that mix, because people who are volunteering are coming with their kids. Their kids, you know, maybe attend one of the kids' services and have a great time. And then the kids feel like they're kind of like a drag along. Like, it's like, you've got to have a plan for the kids of for that second service too. I know, I think, Rich, where you attend at Conexus, they do like a special room for kids, right? With parents are serving a second service, which I think is a great thing to do, but there's got to be a plan, or else it's just, it becomes an excessive stress piece for parents to consider and for the kids, for their own experience of a Sunday morning, to have to kind of, you know, go between their time or go to two. I'll be honest, my daughter every once in a while goes to two kids services in a row, and I just tell her, I'm like, go be a leader. It's not always her ideal, but I just think it's an important thing to consider.
Natalie, do you see, like, a lot of churches use the model of, for their kids, children's ministry, that there's like the one service, and then there's also like kind of a hangout or a chill experience for the other time. So for parents that are serving one and attending one, their kids don't just go and they learn about, Daniel again for another message. They don't just learn that same lesson again, see the felt board one more time, but yeah. They have a different experience. For you, is that from I love this conversation. Is that the win to launch with that from a kid's perspective, that until you're ready, if you're going to launch two, you better be ready to launch those two different experiences for the kids on the get-go, or it's not a win from your seat.
If it's not that, what you're saying, there's got to be some plan for the kids. Mm. So do the kids serve alongside their parents for the first service and then attend the kids program in the second? That's cool. Actually, if your kids are kind of in that range where they could do that, I think that's an incredible win. But I think there just has to be some intentionality, whether it's what you have suggested, Ben, or something, there needs to be the kids factored into that mix.
Yeah. And I think, I think this is a good conversation, and I think it's helpful for Robert to hear from a couple different perspectives. Cause I do think this question, and I'm not entirely surprised kind of how it's fallen around the circle, because on the kind of service programming end, getting the band to play one more time, getting the host to host one more time, even getting the preacher to preach one more time is not that big of a deal. But kids ministry, typically we've got to find a whole other team of volunteers, right? We've got to find, we're at least 50% more volunteers, if not double. And that does create a bit of a stress. And I guess the thing, Robert, for you, hopefully this isn't just making your decision harder, but hopefully it's nuancing, helping you think about it from a couple different perspectives. But I do think that the critical piece of that is to, I think sometimes we can make these decisions. And Robert, you'd never do this. You're a good leader. You're a Christian. You love the Lord. You're like inclusive. You pull people in, have good conversations. But I have seen campus pastor types or executive leader type people who only see this decision through the lens of what happens in the big church, the adult church room. And they see it as the, like, well, what's the big deal? Like, come on, it's not that big of a deal, but it is. It does take more, particularly on the kids side. And the same is on the guest connection side. Wouldn't be typical that I would think that you would have the same people serve through the entire morning. You probably would turn over for multiple services on, in your New Year kiosks and that sort of thing. So it does increase the number of volunteers.
Just to put into perspective, maybe, I know that one of our, kids pastors at our production location, she deals with, I think it's between 300 and 400 volunteers. Mm-hmm. as one that would be on the larger side of any of our campuses.
Yes. Yep.
Like, as far as just attendance.
And it's so just volunteers. Yeah, exactly.
That level of mass. And I think, unfortunately, because we often see the main service, and I'm hardcore air quoting, the main service is wherever the adults are, that the conversation of what are the kids and youth has to come into play. Anyway, I feel like I totally cut Ben off.
No,
Ben, love it. Thanks for that.
I love the pushback. That's great.
I was going to say that, that pushback is good because it's so hard to, it's so easy to forget the parents of small children, mm-hmm. or even children in general. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. So it made me think, gosh, how do we handle that? And mm-hmm. and I know in our context, there are four things that happen for volunteers who serve multiple services who have children. Mm-hmm. We do have a change maker lounge, which is our volunteer lounge, because people are there multiple services. There's a place and there's food in there. Mm-hmm. There's a host in there. There's tables in there. It's nice. It might be rough if there were a bunch of kids or two smaller kids in there, but that's definitely someplace where they go. Our service is kid friendly. It's not kid targeted, but it's kid friendly. So a kid that comes into the service does get stuff out of him and enjoys it. And we even have people who will look around looking for kids and handing them coloring books and doing, some things too in the service. We do the idea of having the kids serve with their parents or serve in some other way. We do that. I know that when I do Next Steps and I have volunteers who attend worship and then they table host, for instance, in Next Steps, and some of their kids, if they've already been in the program, especially if they're kind of on the top end of the age, it's like, I'm not going to stay again. They will have them run tech, just kind of, be up there and run tech and give them a job. And they, they just feel really excited about getting to do something important at that stage of life. And then a lot of them, our kids program, it sounds like bragging, but our kids program is just so awesome. And you know, when we have guests, literally one of the things, guests that were not church people before but are becoming church people, one of the reasons they do, they say, we can't get away without going to church because our kids wake them up.
Right.
Wake
kids up, love it. Right. Exactly. That's what
they love the program. So
it's so good.
Yeah. Sitting through it again for kids does not seem to be a boring thing for them. At least I haven't heard that. They like to go again. Like it's that fun. So that's what we do. And I think maybe if you're wondering how many services to start, like Robert is, and wondering the impact on volunteers with kids, which I'm glad Natalie brought that up. I think that those are four things that we're just doing, you know, or that we see happening with volunteers who have kids to make the two services happening, at least here at Eastside.
You guys also have a great playground, like play structure for kids.
Yes. Which
is, I mean, when you're in California, you can swing those things year round, and that's really nice too.
That is true. That's another one. Yeah.
Rich, do you mind if I hit a Robert didn't bring this up, but I think there's another layer of this onion in relationship to evening services. So he talked about, you know, launching, I presume he's talking about two morning services, but when church is thinking about expanding, hey, we've jammed up those morning times. We need to go to an evening. I think there is an application for this as well, where from the service programming perspective, this is where it gets difficult, where it's not as easy to say, just do it again. Because again, if you're thinking through the worship team perspective, if at one evening of the week, they're going to do some individual practice, another evening, they're going to do the team practice. And then they come out Saturday night for a service, and then they're expected to do Sunday morning. So you're looking at 4 days over the course of their 7-work week for them to be engaged in some type of volunteering, which is a really big ask. And so because of that, my suggestion is for those evening services to, again, consider, do we launch two instead of launching one, just for the volunteer burnout, and not asking volunteers to serve across two different days. Sunday's a little different. You know, it's a little easier. Like, I'm just committing Sunday. It's, you know, it's morning and evening. It feels like it's the full, you know, doesn't feel like the full day. It is the full day. But if you can launch two, then there's a possibility for having those teams to not be the same team. Which some areas of ministry are a little easier. Some, like the lower skilled ones, you can pull that off. You can rotate in different volunteers. It's not a problem. But the more specialized areas, I'm sure with kids, it's probably similar, and family, it's similar this way. But to worship and production, if you try to pull in a volunteer 10 minutes before the service and say go, they're not going to succeed because it's so specialized in terms of what they're trying to do. So that's the other layer. When you're launching an evening service, consider launching two for the same reason.
Nice. Very good. I think, you know, so I'd love to weigh in on this one as well. I do think, so my bias would be towards two. I would say, I think, and I'll take it a little bit, it kind of adds a couple things that people have said, but maybe with a little bit of a different spin on it. I would say two is a great starting point, particularly from our guest point of view, for a little bit of a different reason than Ben said. I have spent a lot of time on the service programming side, and the first service is not a rehearsal. The first service is like, it's like a real deal. People actually show up. However, the second service is always better than the first service. And we tend to improve things a little bit between the first and the second. And my experience has been that typically the kind of percentage of unchurched people is typically higher in that later service on a Sunday morning. So if you do like a 9 and 11, it typically, not always, but typically is higher at that 11. And so my pushback, if you're thinking, Robert, another way to think about this, which may be that this may be the third way, like to be a third way leader, if you're thinking about only doing one, which I can understand that from kids and from those different perspectives, my encouragement to you would be to think about running basically a full service, but without an audience in the room, without people actually there. So do a full run through, but even more than a full run through, literally, actually, we're going to have the host come up, do the thing as if it was a service. I know there are churches that do one service that will do that, and they find that they get the benefits of two from a service programming point of view, in that you kind of see it. It goes from being just on a run sheet to being like, oh, this that transition doesn't work. We got to do this differently. But with the without the taxing of having to, and then you can do the you know, it's a little bit easier if, because some churches, I love, you know, Greg, you said that Eastside, you know, your services are kid friendly. A lot of churches are, there's some churches do the opposite, right? Where they kind of kick kids out of the service, which is not great. Like that's not, it's always hard, right? Like I always feel bad when I see that happen. But if you did the kind of volunteer service or the volunteer rally before all that, that is the kind of place you could easily have kids in that environment. And you could do the, like, you know, hey, we're going to have even some stuff, some extra stuff for younger kids to play with and that sort of thing. So again, I think, Robert, my encouragement for you would be to pull your whole team together, to think it through, to talk about it from multiple points of view. It's not a simplistic decision. I too have lived in the, like, we start with two, go back to one, then go to two. Like I've lived through those, and those are a little bit hard. Like it's hard that second time round when you started at two, gone back to one, to then go back to two. It is very difficult to pull the trigger that second time round. And so if you don't think it's going to be viable at two, you probably are wise to start with one and then ramp up after, say, 6-8 months to ramp into two at that point, just from a momentum and leadership point of view. It can be difficult, for sure. So, but if a robust conversation, is there anything else about the two service thing we need to wrestle through here, or help him with before we kind of round out the end of the episode?
I would just say something Ben said that really hit me hard that I hadn't really thought about enough was, the idea that your volunteers are the most invested because they're investing their heart, soul, time in this. And as most invested, they need to have a service where they can invite people, because if you're invested, you want to invite people to come. But how can you invite people to come if you're not maybe going to be able to sit with them or not be in the room, right, or whatever? And I think making sure that your biggest invested people have a service where they can invite the people because they're so invested is really a key thing to keep in mind when considering whether you're going to have one or two services.
Yeah, and I know we're not talking about big days today, but I've just, obviously because we've just gone through the Easter season, I've seen a number of churches this year do the Saturday night Easter service and explicitly call that dynamic out and say, like, hey, we would love, if you're serving on Sunday morning, please come to the Saturday night as our, you know, as our guest. Or, you know, if you're bringing a friend, like, make sure we've got this extra service so that make it easier for you if you're volunteering, actually deliberately calling out that volunteering piece. Because I think some of those, on those big days, they do tend to be kind of like an all serve. You've got your best people on, which works against the invite culture. It works against, because those people are also the people who are the most likely to invite your friends. So that's great. Well, I appreciate everybody being on the episode today. Robert, we're cheering for you. Excited for Reality Church. I'm excited for your launch and excited that you're stepping out to try that. And really to everybody, we know that there's a lot of churches at this time of year that are right in the weeds of thinking about fall launches, and we want to continue to help. So like in future episodes, we'd love for you to record your voicemail, send it to us. We'd love to feature you on a future episode. You can just email that to me at rich@unseminary.com. Natalie, any final words? And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that as we wrap up the episode?
Final word is, even though it's 3-1, I still feel strongly about the one service, guys. And
I think it's 2.5 versus 1. I can see the one. I can see the one.
I know you can always go to 2, but going back to 1 feels like you're losing something. So just throwing that out there to
as yes, that is true.
No, you can find me on Twitter at Natalie Frisk. You can email me at natalie.frisk@themeetinghouse.com. natalie.frisk@themeetinghouse.com. And I've already connected with a couple of listeners who are curious about how to do this kids and youth thing well. And I love hearing from them. So feel free to reach out.
Perfect. Greg, what about you? If any last words, or if people want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, the easiest way to connect with me is my website. It's called Climbing the Assimilators, and the URL is gregcurtis-assimilation.com. But it's got a contact me feature to email me, and we can email back and forth. Tons of free stuff, and I've got a ton of stuff on there now in prep for Easter for people. And also follow me on Instagram, gregcurtis-cta. It stands for Climbing the Assimilators.
Nice. And then finally, Ben, you're going to get the last word here. And if people want to get a chance to connect with you, how can they do that?
When you launch your services, you need, one or two, you need to make sure it's a win for all ages and all environments. How's that, Natalie? Yes, did I scoop the baby in half? There you go. you can get it. You can connect with me.
Unity right there, sir.
Yes. Nice. You can connect with me on social media at Ben Stapley or find out more information at benstapley.info.
Nice. Thanks so much, friends. We'll see you next month for our next edition of All About Multisite.